to another sparkling edition of the Thought Police with me, Mike Graham, and him, Kevin O'Sullivan. And it's quite an auspicious week, this, isn't it? I'm recording it slightly late again because I was in America until Tuesday morning. So thanks for doing my show this week.
Well, you're welcome.
I was telling you what, I was fucked.
I can tell.
More so than I thought I would be. I think partly because we had quite a drunken weekend. And so,
no shit.
Yeah, I know.
You and your family
but
drinking.
I slept okay. But I think it was just the fact that in the old days, I mean, I remember coming to London once on a plane to pick up a cheque from Today, the newspaper, and then banking the cheque, having a few drinks, and going back the same fucking day. But Tuesday morning, I was like almost falling asleep in the studio by about the third hour because I'd only had a couple of hours sleep. And normally speaking, that would be fine. But I guess as you get older, it's slightly more difficult.
Well, I can remember when I lived in LA, coming to New York on Friday.
Yeah.
Going back, I think, on the Monday, having never gone to bed.
Right, yes. I spent about 10 years in New York.
We all spent a lot of time in those days.
People said to me, why'd you come back? I said, I fancy to sleep.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly right. But those were different days. But anyway, listen, I had a lot of trouble getting... We're recording this in our usual pub near London Bridge. I had a lot of trouble getting here because... There's so many people on the streets, you can't now walk down them because they're bringing in a million people every year.
Yes.
Fucking unbelievable.
And I know, and they're going, but don't worry, it's a good thing because there are lots of jobs that they need to do and jobs need to be filled. London now is a ridiculous fucking morass of human excrement.
The whole country. I mean, you know, we're used to sitting around fuming about the illegal migrant crisis, you know, which... You know, they're going about their cross channel.
Which Rishi Sunak keeps telling us is more important, right?
Well, it's a disgrace and must be stopped.
Yeah.
But you're talking about illegally,
right?
You're talking about. I mean, it's not only the cross channel migrants that are illegal. They come in by plane, by lorry, God knows what. So you're talking about 150,000 max per year. Legally, this government is letting in a million.
Right.
A million every
and
fucking year.
And that's ridiculous, right?
Ridiculous. Doesn't even begin to cover it. It's fucking absurd.
And what's even more ridiculous is there's 150,000 people who came that year alone, right? 2022 we're talking about, who came here because they were with... they were dependents of people coming in to either work or to study. Yeah. It's a fucking rip-off. Yeah, it must be a rip-off.
Now, so a lot of them come in to do crucial jobs like fruit picking and shelf stacking and things like that. Low-wage economy. Mm. We're not interested in bringing in highly skilled, qualified people. We need low-skilled...
There are a lot of them in the care sector as well.
Yeah, well, they're low-skill as well, low qualifications. So the thing is, though, you know, so those are the legal... migrants we let in. And then they go, oh, yeah, well, of course, there's also 170,000 from Ukraine and 300,000 from Hong Kong. There's no problem with that. Actually, there is. Yeah.
Also, those numbers are way the fuck off, right? Yeah. It's 200,000 all in, Hong Kong and Ukraine. And also, as you say, why the fuck are we suddenly giving all of these people room to live in this country?
Yeah. The point is...
The Ukrainians are only meant to be coming
for 3 months. I certainly don't want to be unsympathetic towards the Ukrainians. I mean, poor bastards. And, you know, in some ways, I support giving them a place to live. And the Hong Kong people, I guess we've got some kind of
deal with them.
We've got to give them.
But that's quite a small
number. But don't just say, oh, well, that's all right. That's all right. Because the point is, no matter what the reason is for these people coming in, this country is fucking full. Mm. There are 70 million fucking people
here. It's also small. And it's also the most densely populated country in Europe.
Yeah.
People always go, oh, but, you know, they take far more migrants in France and Germany. They actually don't. They fucking reject more asylum claims in every European country apart from this one. This one, they reject hardly any. They only reject about 20% of them, and they probably appeal.
I think you'll find that apart from Gaza, Palestine, this is the most crowded country on the face of the fucking planet.
Oh, great.
You know, we're very small, and we've got a massive... But more people
maybe
live...
Maybe start building tunnels.
France is about 10 times the size of this
France
country.
France is empty.
It's got fewer people living there.
I was just in France, right? And we've had this conversation before, that when you drive around in France, you don't see anyone. I don't know what they're fucking all doing. There was this little town where we were staying near, and we were in the middle of this kind of, you know, idyllic farmland. Yeah. And it was completely fucking like one house for about every 25 acres.
Yeah.
And you go into the town, and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
What the fuck are they doing?
Well, there's only 50 million people living. We've got 70, massive country, 50 million people. We got a tiny country, 70 million.
Right.
And Rishi Sunak and the gang and Suella Braverman, I'm utterly fucking bemused by how they've got the fucking barefaced cheek to sit on television, on the radio, as you said this morning, on the This Morning sofa for reasons that remain mysterious, and say... Well, you know, this level of migrancy, this level of immigration is unsustainable.
Too high.
And is causing intolerable pressure. Well, whose fucking fault is that, you fuckwits? I mean, it's your fault.
Well, it was like that fucking Matt Vickers I had on this morning, right? The deputy chairman of the Tory party said, the thing is, there's too many people out there who are economically inactive. I said, yeah, well, that's your fault.
Yeah.
Because you've given them a load of fucking money to do fuck all.
I know.
Right?
I know.
Here's some money. Don't bother going to work. And if you do go to work, we'll take this money away. So you won't have as much as you've got now. And people are going to go, well, why would I fucking go to work then, you wankers?
But these fucking people, Sunak and the gang, acting as if this problem has arisen organically.
Yes.
And it's nothing to do with them. It's their fucking fault.
They actually caused it.
You know, Rishi Sunak, you know, going, oh, this is so intolerable pressure and unsustainable immigration. I mean, if only he was the Prime Minister and could do something about it.
And if only he hadn't been the fucking Chancellor in Boris Johnson's government since 2019.
Yeah.
And if only he hadn't been a senior member of the fucking cabinet before that.
And these daft ass wankers, what they don't understand is this alone is they've just lost the election.
Yeah.
They've just lost it.
They have.
They don't get it.
They stop anybody else from coming, which they haven't done, and which they can't do, and which they won't do, there's still too many fucking people here already.
Yeah,
we're already going to get the 2023 fucking figures soon, and it will probably end up that there'll be even fucking more.
Yeah.
Even fucking bigger.
Oh, we have a guest, special guest.
Oh, Simon
Boyle. Simon Boyle from The Sun is here.
Would you like to Mr. sit Bizarre. In on the podcast?
Welcome, gents. Well, look, I know that I'm normally swimming around the shallow end of journalism.
Yeah.
But I nothing gets me more irate than listening to you two.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair. You put yourself down too much. Sometimes I think you get ankle deep into journalism.
Yeah.
It's certainly not shallow.
Yeah. Actually, he's the guy that we should ask. Because you might know.
Says a fellow forward.
He might know this. He might know the answer to this. Why the fucking hell did Rishi Sunak go on the most toxic sofa in the world this morning to do an interview with the fucking wankers from this morning?
Well, there's a couple of things within that, aren't there? One is that my first thought was, oh, what are the chances? Just when this is at the height of the agenda, he appears for the softest interview he'll have in his life.
Yeah.
He must be pleased not to see it. I mean, for all of Philip Schofield's many flaws.
Yeah.
He did actually give people a hard time. I mean, basically, he was a show-off.
Right.
Do you remember the camera?
He liked the gossip mode, didn't
he? When he hit the internet to find pedos who hadn't been caught and said, what are you going to do about this?
Absolutely. And, of course, got himself into all sorts of trouble in the process through ITV into the quagmire. But he did like that gotcha moment. You are not going to get that from Alison Hammond or a bloke who was last seen on Blue Peter.
I don't even know who that guy is.
And since then, he's been advertised.
I thought he was somebody from Pirates of the Caribbean.
But I quite liked Schofield for doing that, because although it was a bit kind of maverick and perhaps not like the height of professionalism, it did create a fucking brilliant piece of TV. Cameron's face was the picture.
Yeah. This is the thing, that there was a preconception and probably a misconception that this morning with Phil and Holly there was likely to be a soft touch, and I'm sure it wouldn't be compared to PAX and the like, but or indeed Talk TV.
Well, yeah, we could.
It was prone to these moments where Philip showing off more often than not.
Right.
Just as Susanna Reid can play that card, Good Morning Britain.
Or Richard Madeley.
Absolutely. In that moment of this is going to go viral, they'll just sort of throw caution to the wind and do something even madder.
Well, they went down the Piers Morgan route, though, didn't they, and said, when was the last time you cried? Mm. Oh, that's a hard question. I don't know what the answer was. I don't fucking care.
No.
But then apparently...
The it was the last time you cried? This morning when I saw the immigration figures.
Alison Hammond apparently wheeled out fucking her 8-year-old daughter to ask a question as well. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, really?
If anything was in search of the viral moment, it was surely that.
But this is the trouble with people in the media who are always in search of the viral moment. I remember people coming up to me when we first kind of got together with all of the big companies that we're in now, and they were like, we need another viral video from you. And I'm like, you can't just make a viral video. It's not how it works. You make a video, it goes viral, nobody knows why.
Yeah. yeah.
Right? You can't actually fucking make
one. But what
you
tend to find is somebody will do one that does just that, and then everybody tries to replicate the same formula, and every single follow-up bombs.
I mean, talking about going viral, Mike, I know you were talking to my wife last night. You've got to stop doing that.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's
leave her alone. Leave her alone. She's my wife. No, seriously. You love this, Simon. It's talking of going viral. Rob Lowe's got a new drama.
Yeah.
I think it's on Netflix. It's called Unstable. And it's about a bloke who is growing concrete.
Yeah.
He's found a way to create and grow concrete.
He's capturing carbon or something,
yeah,
right?
And he's making concrete.
This is why she mentioned me, because she thought it was very funny. And I said, well, I've always liked Rob Lowe ever since he had that threesome in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And it was broken on Current Affair, that TV show that used to be on Fox.
Yeah, years ago. Yeah.
And it was a video of him with two girls in a hotel room.
Oh yeah.
And it apparently ruined his career for a while. But I was like, fucking well done.
But then it became a launch pad for a whole new career. He's become a much more interesting.
He's now much
because he was the heartthrob bore.
Because he was quite boring up until then, and everybody kind of went.
Yeah.
He was one of the pretty boys of Hollywood, and he became.
And they're all interchangeable. These people. Yeah. There's
Brat Pack. Do you remember them?
There's a bunch of them now. Is it Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pine, the other Hemsworth.
Yeah.
They're all in those
Marvel films.
Any one of them could
fucking
be sent to the next
marauding all over Wales, buying football teams.
Yeah.
Fuck off, will
you? Exactly.
I mean, for Christ's sake. The thing about that Rob Lowe video, it was impressive. Made me very jealous. He's got a massive fucking wanger, I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yes, it's huge. It's like a fucking racehorse.
Well, thank you for that. Kevin, just when you think you've learned the tone, he manages to go lower.
What was the grotto where your kids saw the horse with
the
heart?
Oh,
the enchanted garden.
The enchanted forest.
In Kent.
This is an old
he takes his kids.
This is an old thought police.
The enchanted forest.
Story, yeah.
There's a fucking horse standing there with a fifth leg.
Not quite the enchantment.
And the kids are like about
what's
seven,
enchanting
seven,
about that?
About 7 and 5. You go, what's that? And I just turned to their mother and went, why don't you explain what that is?
You feel this one, I'll fetch some crumpets.
Yeah, I'll go and get some more crumpets from the team.
Tell you what, Simon, Ali, your colleague Ali Ross fielded an interesting suggestion to me when I had him on as a guest the other day when I was doing your show, Mike, actually. He suggested that I could replace Philip Schofield alongside...
Yeah.
Holly on the sofa.
You think you could be that insincere?
Oh, yeah. I could do that.
That bit I could do.
I could do that bit. It's the rest of this shit I might have trouble with.
I'm not going to obviously name the person involved in this story because that would be a bit embarrassing, but I can tell you that I once witnessed Kevin do a complete U-turn where we were standing in one of the rooms that we prepare ourselves in over the road there, and he was going on like, oh, fucking hell, that show was fucking rubbish. Absolute dog shit. Did you see it? Anyway, the person who had done the show came in and he was like, oh, how are you? Great show. Oh, brilliant. Sorry, I mean, you're definitely tailor-made for TV.
You know this, Simon, in the wonderful world of showbiz, as long as you can fake sincerity, you got it made.
I would love to back you, Mike, in skewering Kevin here, but I'm afraid I'm as guilty as he is.
What an absolute canallo, mate! Oh, what great to see you!
Right up there with, I love your new album.
Yeah. Actually, you were going to tell us a story about Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah.
Simon got
well,
it, so
I mean,
you might have one as well.
It's not the greatest story, but I did meet her, and I didn't have dinner with her alone, but I had dinner with
That's
her.
That's quite cool.
There were around about like 10 of us, and she was launching an album.
Oh, this was in Paris, did you
say? It would have been about 2002, something like that.
Okay.
And you remember Bernard Doherty was always a...
I do, still
a
very good close friend of hers.
Yeah,
the,
good bloke, old Bernard. And he was a big PR. So he invited a few of his special journo mates to... It was great. It was jolly to Paris.
Nice,
great hotel. We went to the Buddha Club, where she gave a performance for about 50 of us. So it was like being in a little pub performance.
Well, she was keen on an impromptu. You mentioned Bernard Doherty here, as you say, like a sort of doyen of the publicist game, and she actually sang at his wedding in a pub.
Yeah,
quite unexpectedly, I believe. Sort of grabbed a microphone and did.
I mean, I know people say these things, but she does sound like she was quite down to earth.
Yeah, well, she said to us, literally about 50 of us standing there, and she said, it's not the biggest audience I've ever played to, but it's definitely the best.
There you go.
Yeah. And that's why I shouted, simply the best.
Yeah, right. Of course
she thought that was very funny.
Yeah, she'd not heard that one before.
No,
Yeah, she should never have done that. Anyway, we went. So we had dinner in the dining room there later on around the table, and she was a really nice lady. I mean, you know, I don't want to pretend I had dinner with Tina Turner.
Well, you did.
I had a chat with her, and I'll tell you a thing about her. I don't know how often you met her, Simon, but she was a strong woman, but she never really got over what Ike Turner did to her. She had that terrible marriage where he beat the fucking shit out of her for years.
I think that's right, and it's funny because even in the coverage today, and it's obviously very kind of glowing, gushing tribute pieces, there is that darkness to her life as well. And while the headlines are all on the achievements, it's hard to sort of distance her from the unpleasantness. To answer your question, only once was, and it was very recently, and we think it may be that the bizarre, the column I write, and sort of carried the last interview with her. It was at the premiere of her musical.
Which is on the Albert Stand.
So she attended that.
Ticket sales through the roof right now.
They will be now, yeah.
They will be now. Well, actually, her death
poor old Tina, but you've got to say, dying was a good career move.
It has been for a lot of people, hasn't it?
Get Elvis Presley.
Might be too soon for those kind of comments.
No, you were saying?
Well,
it's never too soon, no.
Look, the simple truth is, she was still ever the show, you know, the show woman. She was there with bells on, absolutely kind of leading the charge, launching this thing. Plainly, it was hugely lucrative for her, and she knew that. But, you know, given all the
great sound. But this is it. I mean, I heard that, was it something like 150 million album sales or something? Yeah. So she must have been loaded.
Yeah. By the way, this is what it's fucking like to be rich, right? So, you know, she lived in Switzerland with her Swiss husband.
I learned today that the guy that she married was a guy that was sent by, because I spoke to, was it Nick Stewart? The guy who's like, he's an agent stroke manager, the guy that discovered U2. Anyway, he was great. He told the story that she ended up marrying some guy who was German,
who was sent
to pick her up in a car. So he was like a driver, and they started this.
Done all right for himself.
So I went to pick up Tina Turner, ended up fucking marrying
her.
That's
what you call top gear. So they had a fucking massive mansion in Zurich.
That's right.
And when the COVID crisis started, so they used to, obviously go away for glamorous fortnights and, you know, wherever the fuck they went in the world. So when the COVID crisis came along, they realised they couldn't really leave the country. So they bought a £38 million mansion on the lake Zurich, right on the coast, so they didn't have to leave the country.
Yeah.
That's what it's like to be rich.
Yeah.
Well, I can't leave the country. Oh, we got a spare 40 million quid. Yeah. I have, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, very wealthy. We're kind of renting entire islands.
Well, Prince Harry's a bit like that, except what he does is he goes and borrows that money from somebody else and goes, would you mind sponsoring me for a mansion?
What I can do is sign up
to your business and be like a team leader and help you out.
Well, the thing that Harry's done is basically the David Beckham model. So David Beckham, if you buy into his hype, is a big businessman with lots of assets of his own. He never launches any of them. He lends his face to many of them. So there's things like
because they'll do like a whiskey.
Totally. They give him 20%. Yeah. He doesn't take a fee up front.
They put him in all the
ads. That's smart.
Really smart.
And that'll be his business manager saying,
don't worry about the fee.
Get a cut of the action.
That a bit like how Richard Branson used to operate as well? Because Richard Branson never actually owned, or at least after Virgin Music finally became a thing and Tubular Bells went fucking, you know, global, he kind of basically didn't. He loaned the Virgin name to loads of things. Because isn't it true that Absolute Radio ended up becoming Absolute Radio because whoever it was that bought Absolute at the time, which I think was some Indian group, wanted to call it Virgin, and he came in at the last minute and went, that would be another $500 million to use the name Virgin.
Yeah.
And they went, go fuck yourself, and changed it to Absolute.
That sounds entirely the business.
Do you know why he called it Virgin, the whole empire?
No.
He's
the only guy I've ever heard of as well. He claims this, by the way, so I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it. But his wife's allergic to his sperm.
And his conversation.
Never heard that?
No.
Really? Am I the only one that knows that? Why is that?
Well, that sounds like a very dubious line that she's been found.
I'd like to say, for legal reasons, this is merely an allegation.
This is why you have to have sex with other people. Because she was allergic. I mean, I haven't fucking used that one.
Must try that.
For her own safety.
Yeah, of course.
I'll fuck someone else. I didn't want to harm you.
Yeah, I didn't want to do you any harm.
I'll tell you, but you know know this, Simon, we won't go into the details, but the origins of the Virgin Empire are extremely interesting.
Okay.
So his first big thing was Time Out magazine.
Right.
Virgin label, which kind of took over from Ireland. Remember,
I used to go to the first Virgin record shop.
Yeah, it was way later though. So he took over, and he took a few artists from Ireland label. And the thing that really made it was, of course, Tubular Bells and Mike Oldfield.
And that's
I'll tell you about him in a minute. But there are other elements to the launch of the Virgin Legend that are very interesting.
The thing that,
that we can't go into.
But the thing that he was very good at, though, because I remember being, and I'm talking about when I was at school, the sort of mid-70s, so that was pretty early in his career, when he had the show.
Went to school?
I did go to school, not every day.
You didn't pay any attention, did you?
No, of course not. But, you know, some days I, as they used to say in the north, I stayed on the bus and fucking didn't bother going in. But no, I used to, the record shop was there from about 1975, I think. But one of the things he was brilliant at, he had a house in Notting Hill, sort of Holland Park, around the back of Holland Park Avenue. And when he was having his big feud with BA, do you remember?
Yeah.
I turned up there to doorstep him, along with about 50 other fucking journos. And at some point or other, he came out and just said, why don't you just all come into the house? Mm. And he was brilliant at that kind of PR.
Oh, he's good at being a journey.
He gave everybody a drink. He fucking sat down and talked to everybody.
Well, he's been a great self-publicist, isn't he? I mean, if you think about British businessmen, he's still kind of in the chair. You still think Branson, don't you? That's kind of what you...
And he did rescue Kate Winslet, didn't he? Rescue her from the burning building in Necker Island.
Yeah, and then he famously gave...
I'll never fucking forgive him for that.
Well, she married... She married his nephew, didn't she?
Who
dubiously renamed himself Ned Rock and Roll.
That's it. And also, loads of people have been to Necker Island at his kind of, you know, expense.
I'll tell you a story about Richard Branson. So
I don't know how this turned into a Richard Branson.
Well, it's quite interesting. What the fuck?
Let's go around the house, you know, libelous.
So I was in Mallorca. I was in Mallorca on a holiday. I went to a place called Deja, where he used to own...
Deja, that's where the Night Manager restaurant is.
Yeah, well, that's where... Also, it's where he owns a hotel. I think he still does.
Right.
Anyway, in that town, the Night Manager restaurant is all the way down.
It's all the way down, yeah.
At the top of the cliffs, there's a restaurant called Sebastian's, I think it is. And anyway, it's one of the world's great restaurants. Me and my wife turned up there. We went to for a drink.
Because there's one of those big expensive hotels.
Well, that's it. He owns it. Yeah. So we go. I didn't really know anything about it. I just thought, that looks like a nice restaurant. So we go there and said, any chance, of lunch? And the maitre d' looked really pissed off at me. And he said, people wait 8 months to get into this restaurant. But it just so happens we've just had a cancellation. So, yes, we can give you a tip.
So we go.
We've got this great restaurant. Fucking food was amazing. Anyway, we're next to Branson and his wife. For 2 hours, and they never said a fucking word to each other.
Well, that'd be well accountable. Not a fucking word. Sperm, obviously. Maybe it just told her.
I think I did her at the beginning. She said, "You cunt, your fucking sperm is killing me."
Well, and
he went into assault, and they never talked for the next 2 hours.
An intriguing
segue. Last blowjob you ever got.
An intriguing segue.
Absolutely. Fucking sore throats.
An intriguing segue, and perhaps a way to round up on Branson.
Indeed.
There is a single item in the Virgin Empire that doesn't carry the Virgin brand.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Mate's condoms.
Is that his?
Yeah.
Is that his?
Who knew?
But you could hardly have Virgin condoms, can you?
Well, I suppose you could. I mean, it'd be quite a funny thing. My funny story about Daya, I was in Mallorca a few years ago. And
lovely place.
My daughter was there, and we decided, my mother and my children and I decided to go for a sort of, you know, romantic day out in Daya.
Yeah.
And she is one of those people who loves the idea of checking out fucking, TripAdvisor, right? And she went, it says on TripAdvisor, that what you don't want to do is go all the way down the gorge in the car, because you'll never find a parking spot. So you better park the car at the top, which is what we did, and walk down, right? Walked down all the way down, couldn't, because you can't book in the fucking Night Manager restaurant. People arrive on boats and it's all very glamorous. And I walked in and they were fucking grumpy as fuck.
You have to queue.
Spanish
people
who just, it was early though, it was about 11:30. And I was like, you got any tables for lunch? No. I was well, not at all. No. Well, when have you got a table? 5:30. Well, it's now 11:30. Yeah. I saw we got nothing, the fucking place was empty. I said, we got nothing between now and then. And I went, oh, fuck you then. And over the sort of the little tiny little beach, there was a place where you could just get kind of, you know, scampi and chips, which is where we went. It was fine. Afterwards, few beers. It's fucking about, you know, 38 degrees, really, really hot. We have to walk back up the canyon. And of course, when we got down to the bottom of the canyon, there was plenty of parking spaces. We could have brought the fucking car down. I thought I was going to die. By the time, you know, we got lost, because you're walking up through this kind of brush, there's no apparent way
to get... You have to walk down there, yeah.
Well, we have to walk back up, though.
There's no other way.
By the time I got back up, I was literally sweating like a dog, taking probably all my clothes off. I was like about to fucking kill
myself. Man, I wasn't there.
The romantic day.
Not in a good way.
The romantic day didn't go well. You know, it's just sort of fucking rowing.
It's not a great place for a romantic day.
It was too hot, too fucking.
Take too long to get there.
In addition to which, when I was sitting there having fucking lunch, this couple came past and this guy went, "Right, Graham, can I have a picture?" I'm like, "I'm having fucking lunch. Do you mind? You know, fuck off."
Yeah.
You know.
Fuck off, officer.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not wanted. Anyway, listen, we're nearly finished now because we're almost out of time. However, we haven't spoken about the other big story of the week, which is, of course, Boris Johnson.
Oh, yeah, Boris Johnson.
Whether or not he, one, had a party at Chequers, I wonder, and whether, two, all of these WhatsApp messages are going to be handed over. The fuck is wrong with these people? They're all now threatening to take each other to court. He's threatening to sue people. The fucking woman in charge of COVID inquiry is talking about locking people up unless everyone hands over their fucking WhatsApp messages.
Their WhatsApp.
Nobody's going to hand them over. They're all going to say, "Oh, I haven't got them anymore."
They're going to redact them.
Who gives a fuck?
Gives a monkey.
He's a flying fuck.
Yeah. Did you see that in a play last week, a taxi driver was fined £5,000.
Yeah, they're still finding for COVID, right?
For COVID.
So well, that shouldn't be happening.
They're still doing it.
Through, that's ridiculous. He had travelled through a red list country. Remember what that was, dog match. On his way back to somewhere
hadn't,
else.
He hadn't gone into quarantine.
He hadn't gone into a quarantine hotel.
I do fuck off. Home.
He'd been caught doing this. This is like 3 years ago now, two years ago. Still going on. He's in court last week, pleading hard to
that's
the judge.
That's ridiculous.
Saying, "Please, this is so long ago.
Leave me the
fuck
alone.
I made a mistake. I didn't realise. £5,000 he slapped with. That is still happening to this
that
day.
That is disgraceful.
Absolutely
what I would say is I don't give a shit about what happened at Chequers, but I do give a shit about what was going on in government actually during the whole COVID thing. So I wouldn't mind seeing the fucking WhatsApps. But Lord Bethel, for example, has already claimed that he lost all of his WhatsApps when he changed his phone over. And nobody said, "You're a lying fucker. Everybody knows you can keep your WhatsApps if you want." Mm. I'd quite like to have a look at some of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to produce headlines, but if you want to sum up the COVID inquiry in four words, waste of fucking time. Because they won't come up with a fucking conclusion for about 15 years when no one
like
will give a fuck anymore.
Right.
You know, no, as Simon quite rightly says, no one gives a bollocks about Boris fucking Johnson anymore. He's yesterday's man. He's gone. So this Chequers indiscretion.
Carrie's not allergic to his
You know,
sperm,
he broke his own rules.
Sorry,
clear,
keep going on about
yeah,
it.
He broke his own
He's
rules.
He's ignoring me now.
Yeah, no, but he broke his own rules clearly on a serial fucking basis because he didn't understand.
Well, he doesn't understand rules.
But you know,
he doesn't understand fucking rules.
But this
rules.
Chequers shit. What's it going to end up with? It'll get another £100 fine. It'll cost us the taxpayers a few million quid.
We'll be fined £3 million.
Clog up our valuable airwaves and column inches from now until...
But I won't do it. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, how often these fucking people... I mean, I was...
What did you say about Carrie, by the way?
I said she's not allergic to his sperm. Yeah. She's every other baby.
Well, nor are so many other women. The only prime minister we've ever had that we didn't know how many kids he's got.
But you can imagine walking around going, "See, I've still got it." You can just imagine him doing it. "I've still fucking got it. I can still knock them up."
Boris. Yeah, you can pull a bird, but they're all ugly.
And the suggestion is it not that Jacob Rees-Mogg and his family visited Chequers at some point, and his son was playing cricket with Boris? Like,
it's just ridiculous.
Nobody cares.
But I tweeted this morning that the great thing about Britain is that we always give people a second chance. So it's inspirational that we've given the Cabinet Office a second chance to fuck Boris over.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I cannot accept that. It comes back to the first thing that I said, and that if this is now going to be symptomatic of the whole system, if we are still going to be pursuing ordinary people at the same time, there needs to be.
I thought that, to be honest, I did think that had all stopped.
No, and it shocked me. I saw this thing go around last week on the Newswire through the call wire system of this young fella, you know, two young children, taxi driver, ordinary bloke, pleading with the judge, "Please, I didn't know I'd broken the rules, and I cannot spare £5,000 and the judge said, sorry.
I mean, because we've all... I mean,
still
we've all got
do
stories.
It, the madness
I mean,
of this.
We've all, still got stories. Madness. I mean, I didn't see my mother for 2 years.
That's right.
And my sister, because I couldn't go to New York for various reasons, mostly from the American
you
side.
You weren't allowed to.
Well, no,
you?
But they would... No, I could have gone a couple of different times, but the Americans put these fucking rules on that if you were a foreign national, you'd have to be tested and go to quarantine as soon as you arrived, and then be tested and go to quarantine before you left. And I couldn't fucking afford to do that because I literally, I mean, I went last weekend. I went to see my mother, and I went on Friday afternoon after the show finished. I came back overnight Monday,
yeah,
which was fine, long enough. But in those days, COVID-wise, you couldn't risk it.
You didn't have to spare a month.
Well, you heard, I mean, there were people that we worked with who went on holiday, family holidays to Greece, yeah, went to come back after 2 weeks. One of them fucking tested positive and they had to spend another 2 weeks in a hotel.
Yeah.
At their own expense.
I'll tell you, so during that shit, fucked if I was going abroad, it couldn't be.
Oh, right, that's my, that was
not
me.
Not worth the aggro. Just not worth the aggro. I mean, travelling abroad is a bore the best of times until you get there. Nobody needs to spend 2 weeks in a
hotel. I went to fucking Devon in the middle of the COVID crisis for my 2 week holiday because my brother lives there. And 14 fucking days in a row. The sun shone from the moment we got up to the moment we went to fucking bed.
Really?
It was the most amazing.
See, I had a holiday in Devon. Ever. I had a holiday in Devon, I think. It might not. I can't remember if it was during that period or whether it was before. Because my brain is kind of frozen during the whole COVID thing. I can't remember what happened
it's
when.
It's interesting.
I know, it's
not,
like
it's
2 years.
It's not worth remembering.
I can't remember when I did. If it could have been 1 year. It could have been another year. Don't know. But I did go to Devon once. And it was fucking shit. Because we rented this... rented this fucking house, very nice house in the grounds. It had a swimming pool, but it was never warm enough to fucking swim, and it wasn't a heated pool.
Well, there is always that.
And I remember going to a couple of beaches where they had fucking, you couldn't take the dog off the lead. I was like, fuck these cunts, I'm not fucking taking the dog to a beach where you can't take it off the lead. And you know, they have private beaches there owned by people who are sort of, you know, lords of the manor.
Yeah.
And they've got all these fucking rules and regulations, and they had, like, walkways where you could only walk that way. Yeah. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Well, that's my mind. I mean,
also, I have
beaches have been there since the dawn
of
time.
Exactly. What do you think? And also, I've got a Labrador. It's not going to fucking attack anybody. It's too fucking lazy.
Yeah,
you know?
The good thing about Devon is that there's no French people there. There's a problem with
that's
France.
True. The Dutch so like it, though. French. The Dutch love Devon. You see fucking Dutch cars all the time.
It's boring.
Yeah, it really is.
It's boring and full of heroin. So
I went to
right up the Dutch street.
The other problem with Devon is that every fucking place, when we were staying in this house that was kind of half an hour from any decent road, so you'd be going down these fucking hedgerows, going, what the fuck? And you'd meet somebody coming the other way, that's a back up about half a mile. Absolute dog shit. And then we were staying near this farm. When we were there, there was a fucking outbreak of TB. In the cows, right? And some fucking vet turned up and was like, nobody's allowed out of the house while we get rid of all the cows and then kill them all.
Well, yeah.
Up there. This is hardly fucking idyllic holiday material. You know, they're murdering fucking animals.
It can be irritating, but if the weather's nice, it is nice to take a holiday in Britain. I like the West Country. I really do.
No, I used to like the West Country, but it's such a pain in the ass to get to. It's no fun when you're there, and if the weather's no fucking good, it's a washout.
Well, we looked at the sun yesterday. We're doing a bit of cost of living sort of pull together for the summer here. I know it's got a huge one. But one of the things that came up was that the cost of parking your car at Gatwick Airport summer.
That is like doubled, right?
It's £380 for a week.
That's ridiculous.
Now, there are plenty of places in Europe you can get there and back, and that changed from £380.
Right, so just drive the car.
The idea that you've nipped to Spain for a week and you've paid more to leave your car on a small patch of land outside of Gatwick than you have to get to and from Spain.
But the one thing you don't want to do, though, is give it to any of these cowboys who have what they call, you know, off-airport parking.
They just drive your fucking car around.
Turn it into an instant Uber, you know. And if you're lucky if it's still there when you get back.
I'll tell you, 105 miles.
Oh, by the way, talking of cars, if you saw on the way in here, there was a great incident where there was a fucking cement mixer who had tried to get past this parked car, and as I came past, it was right up against it.
She's still there.
And the fucking woman's still out there.
She's
arguing.
Still there taking pictures.
They fucking... It was one of those where you go, if you go forward, you're going to rip the front off it. If you come back, you're going to rip the back off it. And they'd literally just gone too fucking close.
She won't do very well with her insurance claim. She's on a double yellow.
She shouldn't be parked there.
Silly.
That might
may
well cause her some headaches.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, like one last point. When I went to New York once for a week, and I got to the Heathrow late, I had no chance to park it anywhere else except the short term.
Yeah.
So I shoved the car.
it was about 1,200 quid.
Yes. No, I did once. I was sent
1,200 quid for a week.
I was sent by the News of the World to go and track down Steve Winwood in Pennsylvania once. He was doing a show somewhere near Philadelphia. And I think we don't talk about these things. I can't remember how we ever found all this shit out, but we found it out. He was staying at the Marriott. And so I went to the Marriott fucking doorstep. And I basically had to tell him that his ex-wife had AIDS. So it was a real good one, you know. And of course, he told me to fuck off immediately.
Not unsurprisingly.
I said, you know...
useful information like this, you tell me to fuck off.
And he'd just come in and he obviously just done a show and he was all sweaty and it was an entourage. Hi, I'm Mike Graham from the News. Like, oh, hi, what's up? I said, I've just got to ask you a question.
What do you think about that?
I said, do you mind if we go over there? He said, why? I said, well, it's a bit sensitive. Why? I said, well, I'll tell you in a minute. And then he went, did you know that your ex-wife had AIDS? And he went, fuck you. Fuck off. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway. He said, fuck you. And you said, yeah, but I advise you don't fuck her.
I said, you sure you don't want to say anything else? Fuck off. Okay, then. Anyway, the next day, some other fucking shit job. Anyway, I was nearly late for the plane, so I drove back to, I think it was Philadelphia Airport, and I had a rental car, and I just thought to myself, you know what, I haven't got any fucking time to go to the drop-off. So I literally just dropped it in front of the fucking terminal, got out, and there's a guy there, a security guy.
You can't leave it.
And I went, here's the fucking keys, take it back. He said, you can't leave it. I said, it was before 9/11. So you could just literally run in.
Yeah.
There was no security. I got on the plane with 10 minutes to spare. And they just... I mean, I'd never heard from the rental car company, so I presume they
would have found its way.
Yeah, in today's America, you'd get 20 years for that.
Yeah, you'd probably be shot.
Banned in the future.
Yeah, but there we are. Anyway, that's about the end of it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, special thanks to Simon Doyle. It wasn't really scheduled, but what the hell?
No, it was good. Well, some people have said that sometimes we should have a guest.
Yeah.
Just to break the monotony of you fucking talking bollocks all the time.
Just to stop you two killing each other for 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, bizarrely, we actually get on quite well.
We do most of the time. By the way, just to finish on, we did a couple of half-hour sessions on Talk TV from 9:30 to 10 a.m.
Yeah.
for technical reasons. And it was a bit like this.
We did rather well.
Without the swearing, but it fucking came close to the swearing.
Yeah, we did.
You find yourself a couple of times going...
I did actually say fuck once on the breakfast show. And everybody went, actually, with what's going on, I'm surprised you don't swear more often. Didn't get one complaint.
Absolutely,
not one fucking complaint.
I'll play you this afterwards. Somebody sent me, we'll better finish on this, but Jeremy Vine.
Oh, yeah.
On the cyclist wanker. Radio 2.
So actually, I quite like Jeremy Vine, I must say. I like him when he's quite a nice bloke.
When he's not on his soapbox. He's not a bad guy.
I think he's an A-grade bore, but never mind. Let's agree to disagree on that. So he's got on his Radio 2 show, Sandy Shaw, the legend. And she goes, well, Sandy's great. She's talking about her new music.
Sandy Shaw.
She's
not dead.
No, she's not dead. So he goes, I hope you'll forgive me. But we're going to have to play Puppet on a String. So they go, and she goes, all right then. She goes, it's not the old version, is it? It is the new. Oh, it's the old version. For fuck's sake. It went out.
Brilliant. Well, she already sounds more interesting than I thought.
No, she's all right, old Sand.
Okay. She's the one that used to sing barefoot, isn't she?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
From my
eccentric, to say the least.
Very eccentric, yeah. Okay, well, listen, thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
Kevin. Thank you, Simon.
Suitablechoices.co.uk.
Dave Johnson, right?
Dave Johnson, our sponsor. So thank you for that. Go and check
him out.
Always
a pleasure, Dave.
He runs an investment company. He runs a mortgage company. If you need a mortgage, go see him. He's in Margate somewhere. But don't let that put you off. We'll see you next week. Fuck off.
Cunts. We'll be right back.
front.
I think partly because we had quite a drunken weekend. And
no shit.
Yeah, I know.
You and your family drinking.
Yeah, but I mean, I slept okay. Yeah. But I think it was just the fact that in the old days, I mean, I remember coming to London once on a plane to pick up a check from Today, the newspaper, and then banking the check, having a few drinks, and going back the same fucking day. Yeah. But Tuesday morning, I was like almost falling asleep in the studio by about the third hour because I'd only had a couple of hours sleep. And normally speaking, that would be fine. But I guess as you get older, it's slightly more difficult.
Well, I can remember when I lived in LA, coming to New York.
LA's much tougher on
Friday. Yeah. Going back, I think, on the Monday, having never gone to bed.
Right. Yes. I spent about 10 years in New York. Yes.
Well, we all spent a lot of time.
Days. People said to me, why'd you come back? I said, I fancy to sleep.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly right. But those were different days. But anyway, listen, I had a lot of trouble getting... We're recording this in our usual pub.
Yeah.
Near London Bridge. I had a lot of trouble getting here because there's so many people on the streets.
Yes.
You can't now walk down them because they're bringing in 1 million people every year.
Yes.
Fucking unbelievable.
And, I know. And they're going, but don't worry. It's a good thing because there are lots of jobs that they need to do and jobs need to be filled. London now is a ridiculous fucking morass of human excrement.
The whole country. I mean, you know, we're used to sitting around fuming about the illegal migrant crisis, you know, which... You know, they're going about their cross-channel.
Which Rishi Sunak keeps telling us is more important, right?
Well, it's a disgrace and must be stopped.
Yeah.
But you're talking about illegally.
Right.
You're talking about, I mean, it's not only the cross-channel cross-channel migrants that are illegal. They come in by plane, by lorry, God knows what. So you're talking about 150,000 max per year. Legally, this government is letting in 1 million.
Right.
1 million every
and
fucking year.
And that's ridiculous, right?
Ridiculous. Doesn't even begin to cover it. It's fucking absurd.
And what's even more ridiculous is there's 150,000 people who came that year alone, right? 2022 we're talking about, who came here because they were with... they were dependents of people coming in to either work or to study. Yeah. It's a fucking rip-off. Yeah, it must be a rip-off.
Now, so a lot of them come in to do crucial jobs like fruit picking and shelf stacking and things like that. Low-wage economy. Mm. We're not interested in bringing in highly skilled, qualified people. We need low-skilled...
There are a lot of them in the care sector as well.
Yeah, well, they're low-skill as well, low qualifications. So the thing is, though, you know, so those are the legal... migrants we let in. And then they go, oh, yeah, well, of course, there's also 170,000 from Ukraine and 300,000 from Hong Kong. There's no problem with that. Actually, there is. Yeah. There fucking is.
Also, those numbers are way the fuck off, right? Yeah. It's 200,000 all in, Hong Kong and Ukraine. And also, as you say, why the fuck are we suddenly giving all of these people room to live in this country?
Yeah. The point
is... The Ukrainians are only meant to be coming for 3 months.
I certainly don't want to be unsympathetic towards the Ukrainians. I mean, poor bastards. And, you know, in some ways, I support giving them a place to live. And the Hong Kong people, I guess we've got some kind of
deal
with them. We've got to give them.
But that's quite a small
number. But don't just say, oh, well, that's all right. That's all right. Because the point is, no matter what the reason is for these people coming in, this country is fucking full. Mm. There are 70 million fucking people
here.
It's
also small, and it's also the most densely populated country in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
People always go, oh, but, you know, they take far more migrants in France and Germany. They actually don't. They fucking reject more asylum claims in every European country apart from this one. This one, they reject hardly any. They only reject about 20% of them, and they probably appeal.
I think you'll find that apart from Gaza, Palestine, this is the most crowded country on the face of the fucking planet.
Oh, great.
You know, we're very small, and we've got a massive... But more people
maybe
live...
Maybe start building tunnels.
France is about 10 times the size of this
France
country.
France is empty.
It's got fewer people living there.
I was just in France, right, and we've had this conversation before, that when you drive around in France, you don't see anyone. I don't know what they're fucking all doing. There was this little town where we were staying near, and we were in the middle of this kind of, you know, idyllic farmland, and it was completely fucking like one house for about every 25 acres.
Yeah.
And you go into the town, and there's nobody there.
Yeah,
what the fuck are they doing?
Well, there's only 50 million people live there. We've got 70, massive country, 50 million people. We got a tiny country, 70 million.
Right.
And Rishi Sunak and the gang and Suella Braverman, I'm utterly fucking bemused by how they've got the fucking barefaced cheek to sit on television, on the radio, as you said this morning, on the This Morning sofa for reasons that remain mysterious, and say,
well, you know, this level of migrancy, this level of immigration is unsustainable.
Too high.
And it's causing intolerable pressure. Well, whose fucking fault is that, you fuckwits? I mean, it's your fault.
Well, it was like that fucking Matt Vickers I had on this morning, right? The chairman, the deputy chairman of the Tory party, said, the thing is, there's too many people out there who are economically inactive. I said, yeah, well, that's your fault.
Yeah.
Because you've given them a load of fucking money to do fuck all.
I know.
Right?
I know.
Here's some money. Don't bother going to work. And if you do go to work, we'll take this money away. So you won't have as much as you've got now. And people are going to go, well, why would I fucking go to work then, wankers?
But these fucking people, Sunak and the gang, acting as if this problem has arisen organically.
Yes.
And it's nothing it's to do with happened. Them. It's their fucking fault.
They
it's
actually caused it.
You know, Rishi Sunak, you know, going, oh, this is some intolerable pressure and unsustainable immigration. I mean, if only he was the Prime Minister and could do something about it.
And if only he hadn't been the fucking Chancellor in Boris Johnson's government since 2019.
Yeah.
And if only he hadn't been a senior member of the fucking cabinet before that.
And these daft-ass wankers, what they don't understand is this alone. Is they've just lost the election.
Yeah.
They've just lost it.
They have.
Because they don't get it. They don't
even
get
if
it.
They stop anybody else from coming, which they haven't done, and which they can't do, and which they won't do, there's still too many fucking people here already.
Yeah,
we're already going to get the 2023 fucking figures soon, and it will probably end up that there'll be even fucking more, even fucking bigger.
Oh, we have a guest, special guest.
Oh, Simon Ball.
Simon Ball from The Sun is here.
Would you like to sit in on the podcast?
Welcome, gents. Well, look, I know that I'm normally swimming around the shallow end of journalism.
Yeah.
But nothing gets me more irate than listening to you two.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair. You're putting yourself down too much. Sometimes I think you get ankle deep into journalism.
Yeah.
It's certainly not shallow.
Yeah. Actually, he's the guy that we should ask.
Says a fellow forward.
He might know this. He might know the answer to this. Why the fucking hell did Rishi Sunak go on the most toxic sofa in the world this morning to do an interview with the fucking wankers from this morning?
Well, there's a couple of things within that, aren't there? Yeah. One is that my first thought was, oh, what are the chances? Just when this is at the height of the agenda, he appears for the softest interview he'll have in his life.
Yeah.
He must be pleased not to see it. I mean, for all of Philip Schofield's many flaws.
Yeah.
He did actually give people a hard time. I mean, basically, he was a show off.
Right.
Do you remember the camera?
He liked the gotcha moment, didn't he?
When he hit the internet to find pedos who hadn't been caught and said, what are you going to do about this?
Absolutely. And of course, got himself into all sorts of trouble in the process through ITV into the quagmire. But he did like that gotcha moment. You are not going to get that from Alison Hammond.
No.
Or a bloke who was last seen on Blue Peter 20
years ago. I don't even know who that guy is.
And since then, he's been advertised.
I thought he was somebody from Pirates of the Caribbean.
But I quite liked Schofield for doing that, because although it was a bit kind of maverick and perhaps not like the height of professionalism, it did create a fucking brilliant piece of TV. Cameron's face was the picture.
Now, this is the thing, there was a preconception and probably a misconception that this morning with Phil and Holly there was likely to be a soft touch, and I'm sure it would be compared to PAX and the like, but or indeed Talk TV.
Well, yeah, we can.
It was prone to these moments where Philip's showing off more often than not.
Right.
Just as Susanna Reid can play that kind of Good Morning Britain.
Or Richard Madeley.
Absolutely. In that moment of this is going to go viral, they'll just sort of throw caution to the wind and do something even madder than...
Well, they went down the Piers Morgan route, though, didn't they, and said, when was the last time you cried? Mm. Oh, that's a hard question. I don't know what the answer was. I don't fucking care. Yeah. But then apparently...
was the last time you cried? This morning when I saw the immigration figures.
Alison Hammond,
as soon as I got up.
Alison Hammond apparently wheeled out fucking her 8-year-old daughter to ask a question as well. I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
I
really? Well, again, really?
If anything was in search of the viral moment, it was surely that.
But this is the trouble with people in the media who are always in search of the viral moment. I remember people coming up to me when we first kind of got together with all of the big companies that we're in now, and they were like, we need another viral video from you. And I'm like, you can't just make a viral video. It's not how it works. You make a video, it goes viral, nobody knows why.
Yeah.
Right? You can't actually fucking
make
one.
And what you
tend
to find is somebody will do one that does just that, and then everybody tries to replicate the same formula, and every single follow-up bombs.
I mean, talking about going viral, Mike, I know you were talking to my wife last night. I mean, you've got to stop doing that.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's
leave her alone. She's my wife. No, seriously. So you'll love this, Simon. It's talking of going viral. Rob Lowe's got a new drama.
Yeah.
I think it's on Netflix. It's called Unstable. And it's about a bloke who is growing concrete.
Yeah.
He's found a way he's to create way, and grow like, concrete.
He's capturing carbon or something,
yeah,
right?
And he's this making
is,
concrete.
This is why she mentioned me, mentioned it to me, because she thought it was very funny. And I said, well, I've always liked Rob Lowe. ever since he had that threesome in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And it was broken on Current Affair, that TV show that used to be on Fox.
Yeah.
And it was a video of him with two girls in a hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
And it apparently ruined his career for a while. But I was like, fucking well done.
But then it became a launch pad for a whole new career. He's become a much more interesting...
He's now a much more
interesting... Because he was a heartthrob bore.
Because he was quite boring up until then. And everybody kind of went...
Hollywood.
Yeah.
He was one of the pretty boys of Hollywood. And he became...
And they're all interchangeable, these people. Yeah.
The Brat Pack. Do you remember them?
There's a bunch of them now. Is it Chris Hemsworth, Chris Pine, the other Hemsworth.
Yeah.
They're all
in those Marvel films.
Any one of them could
fucking
be set at the next
marauding all over Wales, buying football teams.
Yeah.
Fuck off, will
you? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, for Christ's sake. But yeah, the thing about that Rob Lowe video, it was impressive. Made me very jealous. He's got a massive fucking wanger, I'll tell you that.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yes, it's huge. It's like a fucking racehorse.
Well, thank you for that. As long as you rely on Kevin, just when you think you've learned the tone, he manages to go lower.
What was it? What was the grotto where your kids saw the horse with the
heart? Oh, yeah.
The enchanted dog.
The enchanted forest.
In Kent,
this is an old thought police.
The enchanted forest
story. Yeah,
there's a fucking horse standing there with a fifth leg.
Not quite the enchantment.
And the kids are like,
"What's enchanting about that?"
About 7 and 5. We go, "What's that?" And I just turned to their mother and went, "Why don't you explain what that is?"
You feel this one. I'll fetch some crumpets.
Yeah, I'll go get some more crumpets. You know, from the
tell you what, Simon. Your colleague Ali Ross Field did an interesting suggestion to me when I had him on as a guest the other day when I was doing your show, Mike. Actually, he suggested that I could replace Philip Schofield alongside.
Yeah.
Holly on the sofa.
You think you could be that insincere?
I could do that. That bit I could do.
I've met Kevin before.
I could do that bit. It's the rest of this shit I might have trouble
with. I'm not going to obviously name the person involved in this story because that would be a bit embarrassing, but I can tell you that I once witnessed Kevin do a complete U-turn where we were standing in one of the rooms that we prepare ourselves in over the road there, and he was going on like, fucking hell, that show's fucking rubbish. Absolute dog shit. Did you see it? Anyway, the person who had done the show came in and he was like, oh, how are you? Great show! Brilliant! I mean, you're definitely tailor-made for TV.
You know this, Simon, in the wonderful world of showbiz, as long as you can fake sincerity, you got it made.
I would love to back you, Mike, in skewering Kevin here, but I'm afraid I'm as guilty as he is.
What an absolute canallo, mate! Great to see you!
Right up there with, I love your new album.
Yeah. Actually, you were going to tell us a story about Tina Turner.
Oh, yeah.
Simon got well, one, so I mean, you might have one as well.
It's not the greatest story, but I did meet her, and I didn't have dinner with her alone, but I had dinner with
her. That's quite cool.
There were around about like 10 of us, she was launching an album.
Oh, this was in Paris?
Yeah, it would have been about 2002, something like that.
Okay.
And you remember Bernard Doherty was always a...
I do, still a very good close friend of hers.
Good bloke, old Bernard. And he was a big PR. So he invited a few of his special journo mates to... It was great. It was jolly to Paris.
Nice,
great hotel. We went to the Buddha Club, where she gave a performance for about 50 of us. So it was like being in a little pub performance.
Well, she was keen on an impromptu. You mentioned Bernard Doctor here, as you say, sort of doyen of the publicist game, and she actually sang at his wedding in a pub.
Yeah,
quite unexpectedly, I believe. Sort of grabbed a microphone and did.
I mean, I know people say these things, but she does sound like she was quite down to earth.
Yeah, well, she has said to us, literally about 50 of us standing there, and she said, "It's not the biggest audience I've ever played to, but it's definitely the best."
There you go.
And that's how I shouted, "Simply the best."
Yeah, right. Of course
she thought that was very funny.
Yeah, she'd not heard that one before.
She should never have done that. Anyway, we went, so we had dinner in the dining room there later on around the table, and she was a really nice lady. I mean, you know, I don't want to pretend I had dinner with Tina Turner.
I had a
chat with her, and I'll tell you a thing about her. I don't know how often you met her, Simon, but she was a strong woman, but she never really got over what Ike Turner did to her. She had that terrible marriage where he beat the fucking shit out of her for years.
I think that's right. It's funny because even in the coverage today, and it's obviously very kind of glowing, gushing tribute pieces, there is that darkness to her life as well. And while the headlines are all on the achievements, it's hard to sort of distance her from the from the unpleasantness. To answer your question, only once was, and it was very recently, and we think it may be that the bizarre, the column I write, and sort of carried the last interview with her. It was at the premiere of her musical.
Which is at the Albert Stand.
So she attended that.
It's ticket sales through the roof right now.
Well, they will be now, yeah.
They will be now. Well, actually, her death
poor old Tina, but you've got to say, dying was a good career move.
It has been for a lot of people, hasn't it?
Yeah, Elvis Presley.
Might be too soon for those kind of comments.
You were saying?
Well,
it's never too soon, no.
Look, the simple truth is, she was still ever the show, you know, the show woman. She was there with bells on, absolutely kind of leading the charge, launching this thing. Plainly, it was hugely lucrative for her, and she knew that. But, you know, giving all the
great sound. But this is it. I mean, I heard that, was it something like 150 million album sales or something? Yeah. So she must have been fucking loaded.
Yeah. By the way, this is what it's fucking like to be rich, right? So, you know, she lived in Switzerland with her Swiss husband. Right. So
I learned today that the guy that she married was a guy that was sent by, because I spoke to, was it Nick Stewart? The guy who's like, he's an agent stroke manager, the guy that discovered U2. Anyway, he was great. He told the story that she ended up marrying some guy who was German, sent to pick her up in a car. So he was like a driver. And they started this.
Done all right for himself.
So I went to pick up Tina Turner, ended up fucking marrying
her.
That's
what you call top gear. Yeah. Anyway, so they had a fucking massive mansion in Zurich.
That's right.
And when the COVID crisis started, so they used to, obviously go away for glamorous fortnights and, you know, wherever the fuck they went in the world. So when the COVID crisis came along, they realised they couldn't really leave the country. So they bought a £38 million mansion on the lake Zurich, right on the coast, so they didn't have to leave the country.
Yeah.
That's what it's like to be rich.
Yeah.
Well, I can't leave the country. Oh, we got a spare 40 million quid. Yeah. I have, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, very wealthy. We're kind of renting entire islands.
Well, Prince Harry's a bit like that, except what he does is he goes and borrows that money from somebody else and goes, would you mind sponsoring me for a mansion?
What I can do is sign up
to your business and be like a team leader and help you out.
Well, this is the thing that Harry's done is basically the David Beckham model. So David Beckham, if you buy into his hype, is a big businessman with lots of assets of his own. He never launches any of them. He lends his face to many of them. So there's things like
because they'll do like whiskey.
They give him 20%. Yeah. He doesn't take a fee up front.
They put him in all the ads.
That's smart.
Really smart.
That'll be his business manager saying,
but that's a bit
don't worry about the fee.
Don't worry about the fee.
Get a cut of the action.
That a bit like how Richard Branson used to operate as well? Because Richard Branson never actually owned, or at least after Virgin Music finally became a thing and Tubular Bells went fucking, global, he kind of basically didn't. He loaned the Virgin name to loads of things. Because isn't it true that Absolute Radio ended up becoming Absolute Radio because whoever it was that bought Absolute at the time, which I think was some Indian group, wanted to call it Virgin, and he came in at the last minute and went, that would be another $500,000 to use the name Virgin.
Yeah.
And they went, go fuck yourself, and changed it to Absolute.
That sounds entirely the business.
Do you know why he called it Virgin, the whole empire?
No.
He's
the only guy I've ever heard of as well. He claims this, by the way, so I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it. His wife's allergic to his sperm.
And his conversation.
Have you never heard that?
No.
Really? Am I the only one that knows that? Why is that?
Well, that sounds like a very dubious line that she's been
passing.
Merely an allegation.
This is why you have to have sex with other people. Because she was a nurse. I mean, even I haven't fucking used that one.
Must try that.
It was for her own safety.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, I'll fuck someone else. I didn't want to harm you.
Yeah, I didn't want to do you any harm.
I'll tell you, but you know this, Simon. We won't go into the details, but the origins of the Virgin Empire are extremely interesting.
Okay.
So his first big thing was Time Out magazine.
Right.
Virgin label, which kind of took over from Ireland. Remember,
I used to go to the first Virgin record shop.
Yeah. Way later though. So he took over, and he took a few artists from Ireland label, And the thing that really made it was, of course, Tubular Bells and Mike Oldfield.
And that's
I'll tell you about him in a minute. But there are other elements to the launch of the Virgin Legend that are very interesting.
The thing that,
that we can't go into.
But the thing that he was very good at, though, because I remember being, and I'm talking about when I was at school, the sort of mid-70s, so that was pretty early in his career, when he had the shop.
You went to school?
I did go to school, not every day.
You didn't pay any attention, did you?
No, of course not. But, you know, some days I did, as they used to say in the north, I stayed on the bus and fucking didn't bother going in. But no, I used to, the record shop was there from about 1975, I think. But one of the things he was brilliant at, he had a house in Notting Hill, sort of Holland Park, around the back of Holland Park Avenue. And when he was having his big feud with BA, do you remember?
Yeah.
I turned up there to doorstep him, along with about 50 other fucking journos. And at some point or other, he came out and just said, why don't you just all come into the house? Mm. And he was brilliant at that kind of PR.
He's good at being mates with Joe.
He gave everybody a drink. He fucking sat down and talked to everybody.
Well, he's been a great self-publicist, isn't he? I mean, if you think about British businessmen, he's still kind of in the chair. You still think Branson, don't you? That's kind of what you...
And he did rescue Kate Winslet, didn't he? Rescue her from the burning building in Necker Island.
Yeah, and then he famously gave...
I'll never fucking forgive him for that.
Well, she married... She married his nephew, didn't she?
Who
dubiously renamed himself Ned Rock and Roll.
That's it. And also, loads of people have been to Necker Island at his kind of, you know, expense.
I'll tell you a story about Richard Branson. So
I don't know how this turned into a Richard Branson.
Well, it's quite interesting.
What the fuck?
So I was in Mallorca on a holiday. I went to a place called Deja, where he used to own.
Deja, that's where the Night Manager restaurant is.
Yeah. Well, that's where. Also, it's where he owns a hotel. I think he still does.
Right.
Anyway, in that town, the Night Manager restaurant is all the way down.
It's all the way down, yeah.
At the top of the cliff, there's a restaurant called Sebastian's, I think it is. And anyway, it's one of the world's great restaurants. Me and my wife turned up there. We went to for a drink.
Because there's one of those big expensive hotels.
Well, that's it. He owns it.
Yeah.
So we go. I didn't really know anything about it. I just thought, oh, that looks like a nice restaurant. So we go there and said, any chance, of lunch? And the maitre d' looked really pissed off at me. And he said, people wait 8 months to get into this restaurant. But it just so happens we've just had a cancellation.
Right.
So, yes, we can give you a tip.
So we got
this great table, great restaurant. Fucking food was amazing. Anyway, we're next to Branson and his wife for 2 hours. And they never said a fucking word to each other.
Well, that'd be on account of not a being fucking word. To his sperm, obviously. Maybe it just told her.
I think I did her at the beginning. She said, "You cunt, your fucking sperm is killing me."
Well, and
he went into assault, and they never talked for the next 2 hours.
An intriguing
segue. Last blowjob you ever got.
An intriguing segue.
Absolutely.
Fucking sore throats.
An intriguing segue, and perhaps a way to round up on Branson.
Indeed.
There is a single item in the Virgin Empire that doesn't carry the Virgin brand.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Mate's condoms.
Is that his?
Yeah.
Is that his?
Who knew?
But you could hardly have Virgin condoms, can you?
You could. Well, I suppose you could. I mean, it'd be quite a funny thing. My funny story about Deja is I was in Mallorca a few years ago. And
lovely place.
My daughter was there, and we decided, my mother and my children and I decided to go for a sort of, you know, romantic day out in Deja.
Yeah.
And she is one of those people who loves the idea of checking out fucking TripAdvisor, right? And she went, it says on TripAdvisor that what you don't want to do is go all the way down the gorge in the car because you'll never find a parking spot. So you better park the car at the top, which is what we did, and walk down, right? Walked down all the way down, couldn't, because you can't book in the fucking Night Manager restaurant. People arrive on boats and it's all very glamorous. And I walked in and they were fucking grumpy as fuck.
You have to queue.
It was early though, it was about 11:30. And I was like, you got any tables for lunch? No. I said, well, not at all, no. Well, when have you got a table? 5:30. Well, it's now 11:30. I said, we got nothing, the fucking place was empty. I said, we got nothing between now and then. And I went, oh, fuck you then. And over the sort of the little tiny little beach, there was a place where you could just get kind of, you know, scampi and chips, which is where we went. It was fine. Afterwards, a few beers, it's fucking about, you know, 38 degrees, really, really hot. We have to walk back up the canyon. And of course, when we got down to the bottom of the canyon, there was plenty of parking spaces. We could have brought the fucking car down. I thought I was going to die. By the time, you know, we got lost, because you're walking up through this kind of brush, there's no apparent way.
You have to walk down there, yeah.
Well, we have to walk back up, though.
There's no other way.
By the time we got back up, I was literally sweating like a dog. Yeah, I'd taken probably all my clothes off. I was like about to fucking kill
myself. Man, I wasn't there.
The romantic day.
Not in a good way.
The romantic day didn't go well. You know, it's just had a fucking row.
It's not a great place for a romantic day.
It was too hot. Too fucking long to get there. Yeah. In addition to which, when I was sitting there having fucking lunch, this couple came past. This guy went, "Right, Graham, can I have a picture?" I'm like, "I'm having fucking lunch. Do you mind? You know, fuck off.
Yeah. You know, fuck off, officer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not wanted." Anyway, listen, we're nearly finished now because we're almost out of time. However, we haven't spoken about the other big story of the week, which is of course Boris Johnson.
Oh yeah, Boris Johnson.
Whether or not he had a party at Chequers, I wonder. And whether all of these WhatsApp messages are going to be handed over. The fuck is wrong with these people? They're all now threatening to take each other to court. Threatening to sue people. The fucking woman in charge of the COVID inquiry is talking about locking people up unless everyone hands over their fucking WhatsApp messages.
WhatsApp.
Nobody's going to hand them over. They're all going to say, "Oh, I haven't got them anymore."
They're going to redact them.
Who gives a fuck?
Gives a monkey.
Oh, he's a flying fuck.
Yeah. Did you see that in LA last week, a taxi driver was fined £5,000.
Yeah, they're still fining him for COVID, right?
For COVID.
Well, that shouldn't be happening.
They're still doing it.
That's ridiculous. He had travelled through a red list country. Remember what that was, Doc? On his way back to somewhere else.
He hadn't gone into quarantine.
And he hadn't gone into a quarantine hotel.
I do fuck off.
He'd been caught doing this. This is like 3 years ago now, two years ago. Still going on. He's in court last week, pleading hard to
come to judge. That's ridiculous.
Saying, "Please, this is so long ago.
Leave me the fuck alone.
I made a mistake. I didn't realise. £5,000 he slapped with. That is still happening to this
that
day.
That is disgraceful.
Absolutely.
I mean, what I would say is I don't give a shit about what happened at Chequers, but I do give a shit about what was going on in government actually during the whole COVID thing. So I wouldn't mind seeing the fucking WhatsApps. Mm. But Lord Bethel, for example, has already claimed that he lost all of his WhatsApps when he changed his phone over. And nobody said, "You're a lying fucker. Everybody knows you can keep your WhatsApps if you want." Yeah. I'd quite like to have a look at some of those. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to produce headlines, but if you want to sum up the COVID inquiry in four words, waste of fucking time. Because they won't come up with a fucking conclusion for about 15 years when no one will give a fuck anymore.
Right.
You know, as Simon quite rightly says, no one gives a bollocks about Boris fucking Johnson anymore. He's yesterday's man. He's gone. So this Chequers indiscretion.
Carrie's not allergic to his
sperm. He broke his own rules.
Sorry, keep going on about
it. He broke his own rules.
He's just ignoring me now.
But he broke his own rules clearly on a serial fucking basis because he didn't understand.
Well, he doesn't understand rules.
But you know,
he doesn't understand fucking rules.
But this Chequers shit, what's it going to end up with? It'll get another £100 fine. It'll cost us, the taxpayers, a few million quid.
We'll be fined £3 million.
Clog up our valuable airwaves and column inches from now until...
And I won't do it. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it, how often these fucking people... I mean, I was...
What did you say about Carrie, by the way?
I said she's not allergic to his sperm. Yeah. She's every other baby.
Well, nor are so many other women. The only prime minister we've ever had that we didn't know how many kids he's got.
But you can imagine walking around going, "See, I've still got it." You can just imagine him doing it. "I've still fucking got it. I can still knock them up."
Boris. Yeah, you can pull a bird, but they're all ugly.
And the suggestion is it not that Jacob Rees-Mogg and his family visited Chequers at some point, and his son was playing cricket with Boris? Like,
it's just ridiculous.
Nobody cares.
I tweeted this morning that the great thing about Britain is that we always give people a second chance. So it's inspirational that we've given the Cabinet Office a second chance to fuck Boris over.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I cannot accept that. It comes back to the first thing that I said. If this is now going to be symptomatic of the whole system, if we are still going to be pursuing ordinary people at the same time,
there needs to be.
I did think that had all stopped. No, and it shocked me. I saw this thing go around last week on the Newswire through the call wire system of this young fella, you know, two young children, taxi driver, ordinary bloke, pleading with the judge, "Please, I didn't know I'd broken the rules, and I cannot spare." Mm. £5,000, and the judge said,
We've still got stories. I mean, I didn't see my mother for 2 years,
that's right,
and my sister because I couldn't go to New York for various reasons, mostly from the American side.
You weren't allowed to.
I could have gone a couple of different times, but the Americans put these fucking rules on that if you were a foreign national, you'd have to be tested and go to quarantine as soon as you arrive, and then be tested and go to quarantine before you left. And I couldn't fucking afford to do that because I literally, I mean, I went last weekend. I went to see my mother, and I went on Friday afternoon after the show finished. I came back overnight Monday, which was fine, long enough. But in those days, COVID-wise, you couldn't risk it.
You didn't have to spare a month.
Well, you heard, I mean, there were people that we worked with who went on holiday, family holidays to Greece, went to come back after 2 weeks. One of them fucking tested positive and they had to spend another 2 weeks in a hotel.
Yeah.
At their own expense.
I'll tell you, so during that shit, fucked if I was going abroad, as it couldn't be hard.
All right, that's my, that was
not
me.
Not worth the aggro. Just not worth the aggro. I mean, travelling abroad is a ball on the best of times until you get there. Nobody needs to spend 2 weeks in a hotel.
I went to fucking Devon in the middle of the COVID crisis for my 2 week holiday because my brother lives there. And 14 fucking days in a row, the sun shone from the moment we got up to the moment we went to fucking bed.
Really?
It was the most amazing.
See, I had a holiday in Devon. Ever. I had a holiday in Devon, I think. It might not. I can't remember if it was during that period or whether it was before. Because my brain is kind of frozen during the whole COVID thing. I can't remember what happened
it's
when.
Interesting.
It's like two years.
It's not worth remembering.
But I can't remember when I did. It could have been 1 year. It could have been another year. Don't know. But I did go to Devon once. And it was fucking shit because we rented this. Rented this fucking house, very nice house in the grounds. It had a swimming pool, but it was never warm enough to fucking swim, and it wasn't a heated pool.
Well, there is always that.
And I remember going to a couple of beaches where they had fucking, you couldn't take the dog off the lead. I was like, fuck these cunts. I'm not fucking taking the dog to a beach where you can't take it off the lead. And, you know, they have private beaches there, owned by people who are sort of, you know, lords of the manor. Yeah. And they've got all these fucking rules and regulations, and they had, like, walkways where you could only walk that way. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Well, not by mine. I mean, and also, I have beaches have been there since the dawn
of
time.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think? And also, I've got a Labrador. It's not going to fucking attack anybody. It's too fucking lazy.
Yeah, but the good thing about Devon is that there's no French people there.
That's true. The Dutch like it, though. French. The Dutch love Devon. You see fucking Dutch cars all the time.
It's boring.
Yeah, it really is.
It's boring and full of heroin. So it's right up the Dutch street.
The other problem with Devon is that every fucking place, when we were staying in this house that was kind of half an hour from any decent road, so you'd be going down these fucking hedgerows going, what the fuck? And you'd meet somebody coming the other way that's a back up about half a mile. Absolute dog shit. And then we were staying near this farm. When we were there, there was a fucking outbreak of TB in the cows, right? And some fucking vet turned up and was like, nobody's allowed out of the house while we get rid of all the cows and then kill them all. Up there.
This is hardly
idyllic holiday material. You know, they're murdering murdering animals.
It can be irritating, but if the weather's nice, it is nice to take a holiday in Britain. I like the West Country. I really do.
No, I used to like the West Country, but it's such a pain in the ass to get to. It's no fun when you're there, and if the weather's no fucking good, it's a washout.
Well, we looked at the sun yesterday. We're doing a bit of cost of living sort of pull together for the summer. Huge one. Well, one of the things that came up was that the cost of parking your car at Gatwick Airport summer.
That is like doubled, right?
It's £380 for a week.
That's ridiculous.
Now, there are plenty of places in Europe you can get there and back, and that changed from £380.
Right, so just drive the car.
The idea that you've nipped to Spain for a week and you've paid more to leave your car on a small patch of land outside of Gatwick than you have to get to and from Spain.
But the one thing you don't want to do, though, is give it to any of these cowboys who have what they call, you know, off-airport parking.
They just drive your fucking car around.
Turn it into an instant Uber, you know. And if you're lucky if it's still there when you get back.
So I'll tell
you,
one time.
Oh, by the way, talking of cars, if you saw on the way in here, there was a great incident where there was a fucking cement mixer who had tried to get past this parked car, and as I came past, it was right up against it.
She's still there.
And the fucking woman's still out there.
She's
arguing.
She's still there taking pictures.
Because they fucking... It was one of those where you go, if you go forward, you're going to rip the front off it. If you come back, you're going to rip the back off it. And they'd literally just gone too fucking close.
She won't do very well with her insurance claim. She's on a double yellow.
She shouldn't be parked there.
Silly.
That might
that
may well cause us some headaches.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, one last point. When I went to New York once for a week, and I got to the Heathrow late, I had no chance to park it anywhere else except the short term.
Yeah.
It was about £1,200. £1,200 for a week.
I was sent by the News of the World to go and track down Steve Winwood in Pennsylvania once. He was doing a show somewhere near Philadelphia. And I suppose we don't talk about these things. I can't remember how we ever found all this shit out, but we found it out. He was staying at the Marriott. And so I went to the Marriott fucking doorstep, and I basically had to tell him that his ex-wife had AIDS. So it was a real good one, you know. And of course, he told me to fuck off immediately.
Not unsurprisingly.
Not unsurprisingly. I said, you know...
Well, I'll give you useful information, you tell me to fuck off.
And he'd just come in and he obviously just done a show and he was all sweaty and it was an entourage. Hi, I'm Mike Graham from the News. Well, oh, hi, what's up? I said, I've just got to ask you a question.
What do you think about that?
I said, do you mind if we go over there? He said, why? I said, well, it's a bit sensitive. Why? I said, well, I'll tell you in a minute. And then he went, did you know that your ex-wife got AIDS? And he went, ah, fuck you. Fuck off. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway. He said, fuck you. And you said, yeah, but I advise you don't fuck her.
I said, sure you don't want to say anything else? Fuck off. Okay, then. Anyway, the next day,
I had to do some other fucking shit job.
Anyway, I was nearly late for the plane, so I drove back to, I think it was Philadelphia Airport, and I had a rental car, and I just thought to myself, you know what, I haven't got any fucking time to go to the to drop off. So I literally just dropped it in front of the fucking terminal, got out, and there's a guy there, a security guy.
You can't leave it.
And I went, here's the fucking keys, take it back. He said, you can't leave it. I said, well, fucking it was before 9/11. So you could just literally run in.
Yeah.
There was no security. I got on the plane with 10 minutes to spare. And they just, I mean, I'd never heard from the rental car company, so I presume they
would have found its way.
Yeah, in today's America, you get 20 years for that.
Yeah, you'd probably be shot.
Yeah, it's banned in the future.
Yeah, but there we are. Anyway, that's about the end of it, isn't it?
Well, yeah, special thanks to Simon Boyle. It wasn't really scheduled, but hey, what the hell?
No, it was good. Well, some people have said that sometimes we should have a guest.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to break the monotony of you fucking talking bollocks all the time.
Just to stop you two killing each other for 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, bizarrely, we actually get on quite well.
We do most of the time. By the way, just to finish on, we did a couple of half-hour sessions on Talk TV from 9:30 to 10 a.m. for technical reasons, and it was a bit like this.
We did rather well
without the swearing, but it fucking came close to swearing.
Yeah, we did.
You find yourself a couple of times going.
Yeah, I did actually say fuck once on the breakfast show, and everybody went. Actually, with what's going on, I'm surprised you don't swear more often. Didn't get one complaint.
Absolutely,
not one fucking complaint.
By the way, I'll play you this afterwards. Somebody sent me. We'll better finish on this, but Jeremy Vine.
Oh yeah,
on the cyclist wanker on Radio 2. So
actually, I quite like Jeremy Vine. I must say, I like him when he's quite a nice bloke.
When he's not on his soapbox, he's not about a bad cycling.
Guy. I think he's a grade bore, but never mind. Let's agree to disagree on that. So he's got on his show, Radio 2 show, Sandy Shaw, the legend, and she goes, well, Sandy's great. She's talking about her new music.
And, Sandy Shaw?
Sandy Shaw,
she's not dead?
No, she's not dead. Okay, so no. he said, I hope you'll forgive me, but we're going to have to play Puppet on a String. So they go, and she goes, all right then. She goes, it's not the old version, is it? It is the new. Oh, it's the old version. For fuck's sake.
It went out. Brilliant. Well, she already sounds more interesting than I thought.
No, she's all right, old Sand.
Okay. She's the one that used to sing barefoot, isn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
From my eccentric, to say
the least. Very eccentric, yeah. Okay, well, listen, thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you very much.
Suitablechoices.co.uk.
Dave Johnson, right?
Dave Johnson, our sponsor. So thank you for that. Go check
him out. Always a pleasure, Dave.
He runs an investment company. He runs a mortgage company. If you need a mortgage, go see him. He's in Margate somewhere. But don't let that put you off. We'll see you next week. Fuck off.
Cunts.